The man takes off his hat and sets it on a small table by the door. Then he pulls a pair of eyeglasses out of the breast pocket of his overcoat and puts them on, perched partway down his bulbous nose. He takes a piece of folded paper out of another pocket and opens it with one hand.
Let's see. Nem power.
He pronounces it Nem. Peering over his glasses at Mrs. Byrne, he says,
You changed her name to Dorothy?
We thought the girl should have an American name. Mrs. Byrne makes a strangled sound that I interpret as a laugh. Not legally, of course, she adds.
And you did not change her surname?
Of course not.
You weren't considering adoption?
Mercy, no. He looks at me over his glasses, then back at the paper. The clock ticks loudly above the mantelpiece. The man folds the paper and puts it back in his pocket.
Dorothy, I am Mr. Sorensen. I am a local agent of the Children's Aid Society, and as such, I oversee the placement of homeless train riders. Oftentimes, the placements work out as they should, and everyone is content. But now and then, unfortunately...
He takes his glasses off and slips them back into his breast pocket.
Things don't work out.
He looks at Mrs. Byrne. She has, I notice, a jagged run in her beige stockings, and her eye makeup is smeared.
And we need to procure new accommodations.
He clears his throat.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I nod, though I'm not sure I do.
Good. There's a couple. In Hemmingford. Well, on a farm outside of that town, actually. Who've requested a girl about your age. A mother, father, and four children. Wilma and Gerald Groat.
I turn to Mrs. Byrne. She is gazing off somewhere in the middle distance. Though she's never been particularly kind to me, her willingness to abandon me comes as a shock. You don't want me anymore. Mr. Sorensen looks back and forth between us.
It's a complicated situation.
As we're talking, Mrs. Byrne drifts over to the window. She pulls aside the lace curtain and gazes out at the street, at the skim milk sky.
I'm sure you have heard this is a difficult time,
Mr. Sorensen continues.
Not only for the Byrnes, but for a lot of people. And, well, their business has been affected.
With a sudden movement, Mrs. Byrne drops the curtain and wheels around. She eats too much! She cries. I have to padlock the refrigerator. It's never enough. She puts her palms over her eyes and runs past us, out into the hallway and up the stairs, where she slams the door at the top. We are silent for a moment. Then Fanny says, That woman ought to be ashamed. The girl is skin and bones. She adds, They never even sent her to school. Mr. Sorensen clears his throat.
Well,
he says,
Perhaps this will be for the best, for all concerned.
He fixes on me again.
The Groats are good country people, from what I hear.
Four children, I say. Why do they want another?
As I understand it, and I could be wrong, I haven't had the pleasure to meet them yet. This is all hearsay, you understand. But what I have gleaned is that Mrs. Groat is once again with child, and she is looking for a mother's helper.
I ponder this. I think of Carmine, of Maisie. Of the twins, sitting at our rickety table on Elizabeth Street, waiting patiently for their apple mash. I imagine a white farmhouse with black shutters, a red barn in the back, a post and rail fence, chickens in a coop. Anything has to be better than a padlocked refrigerator and a pallet in the hall. When do they want me?
I'm taking you there now.
Mr. Sorensen says he'll give me a few minutes to collect my things and goes out to his car. In the hall, I pull my brown suitcase from the back of the closet. Fanny stands in the door of the sewing room and watches me pack. I fold up the three dresses I made, one of which, the blue chambray, I haven't finished, plus my other dress from the Children's Aid. I add the two new sweaters and the corduroy skirt, and the mittens and gloves from Fanny. I'd just as soon leave the ugly mustard coat behind, but Fanny says I'll regret it if I do, that it's even colder out there on those farms than it is here in town. When I'm done, we go back in the sewing room, and Fanny finds a small pair of scissors, two spools of thread, black and white, a pin cushion and pins, and a cellophane packet of needles. She adds a cardboard flat of opalescent buttons for my unfinished dress. Then she wraps it all in cheesecloth for me to tuck in the top of my suitcase. Won't you get in trouble for giving me these? I ask her. Pish, she says. I don't even care. I do not say goodbye to the Burns. Who knows where Mr. Byrne is, and Mrs. Byrne doesn't come downstairs. But Fanny gives me a long hug. She holds my face in her small, cold hands. You are a good girl, Niamh, she says. Don't let anybody tell you different.